But now, first up today, to the place just next door to China, a big focus of late, as you'll know, but likely to be more after tomorrow's release of the Henry Review into Australia and the Asian Century, which we'll be bringing you next week as well, all the reaction. But no, it's Mongolia that actually holds the title of the world's fastest growing economy, a much smaller economy, that's for sure, but the World Bank forecasts over 17% economic growth. What's powering this growth is the huge potential from natural resources, and this has been taking an increasing number of companies there, including Rio Tinto, that has invested to date around $6 billion in developing its copper and gold mine. But recent developments between Rio Tinto and the government are starting to raise questions about how safe it is to do business in a country that's still transitioning from a Soviet Union bloc to a functioning democratic country that's still deciding the balance of foreign investment. Added to this, of course, was the news this week of an Australian lawyer being caught up in a corruption investigation by Mongolian officials. It's a rather complex story, set in a country and culture that seems so remote to most of us. But not to my first guest today, who lived and worked for 18 months there in the capital Ulaanbaatar. David Paterson originally went to Mongolia to set up Rio Tinto's office. And when the company gained management of the Oyu-Tolgo mine in the Gobi Desert in southern Mongolia, he joined the executive team as Vice President of Regional Development and Communication. He's since left the country and the company, but he contacted us to tell this story. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Geraldine.
I gather you used to listen to us via podcast while you were there.
Yes, yes, I kept in touch with Australia that way.
I'm very pleased to hear that. Now, before we get to Mongolia's economy and the political situation, you recently moved back here after living there for 18 months, I think, with your family. What was it like, really?
Well, it was a fascinating country and really is a very foreign experience being in a country like Mongolia. It's got all of the challenges of a third world country, but... You know, very rich culture, a wonderful landscape and a natural environment. And, you know, we thoroughly enjoyed our experience living there.
And from what I read, the city itself, though, is it Ulaanbaatar? Is that how you pronounce
yes,
it?
Yes, yes, Ulaanbaatar.
Ulaanbaatar. It's a very congested, it's a typical third world or emerging world, shall we say, sort of phenomenon. Yes. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. So it's undergoing part of this rapid economic growth means that there's a great deal of congestion. For example, the number of cars on the roads in recent years have increased dramatically, far quicker than the infrastructure has been able to cope, and therefore there's a lot of traffic congestion. There's also a lot of air pollution, and Ulaanbaatar is one of the most polluted cities in the world. So, and that's not so much because of the economic growth, it's because there's been a big influx of people from the countryside into the city, and in order to heat their accommodation, the fuel that they burn creates a great deal of pollution in the city during the winter.
Right. And, of course, it was very much a closed country. So do I assume the traditional culture is still very much alive and obvious or not?
Very much so. Certainly in the countryside, you know, people in many ways live the same way that their forebears would have lived centuries ago. There's obviously a few modern adaptations with motor vehicles and mobile phones, but the culture is very much intact. And around the city, you'll see many people dressed traditionally as they go about their daily business.
So this rapid economic growth, I think up to 17% is one of the estimates. That's quite breathtaking, actually. 10%, yes. 7% more than China. How is that affecting people? Is it is it almost like living through an experiment, if you know what I mean, that you're watching things change before your very eyes?
Well, very much so. In the 18 months that we were there, we could see a number of changes occurring in the city. So there's very high expectations among Mongolians for the benefits that will flow from this economic boom. But of course, many people in the city feel left aside from that. So they see many of the obvious overt signs of growing wealth, but many people are unable to participate in that at this stage.
I have seen a figure that one third of the population have no access to electricity at all. So that really does give a bit of context.
Yes, absolutely. And so many of the people that have moved into the city live in the traditional Mongolian felt tents gers, and they have no electricity, there's no running water, and it's not possible really to have, in that climate, to have running water into those sorts of structures. So until there are apartment blocks, people won't have access certainly to running water and unlikely to have ready access to electricity either.
And it's still a small economy, we have to say. Like, I think it's comparable to sort of Laos or Malta in terms of its GDP. So
yes,
whether it stays that way, of course, I suppose, is the question. Now, you say that Mongolia is strongly democratic and it's working towards greater transparency, and yet the last president is in jail on corruption charges. So all of this money flowing in is having all sorts of ramifications, is it?
Well, yes, he was an earlier president and prime minister who's been jailed, and you know, I think it is a politically robust democracy, and a lot of there's a lot of posturing around the issue about corruption, but there's no doubt it's rated by Transparency International as about 120 on a list of 180 countries in terms of perceptions of corruption. So that is a significant issue in the country.
How was it for you living and working there in the midst of this type of dramatic change? Did you worry about corruption at all? I mean, could you have found yourself in the position of Sarah Armstrong, the Australian lawyer?
Oh, no, I don't think so. I mean, we certainly felt very, very welcomed and accepted. It was, no doubt that the project is contentious and it's controversial and it's in the public gaze all the time. But I certainly never had any fears for my own well-being. So we were able to move around town quite freely and, I would walk to work from time to time.
Right. And so there's no question about foreigners being in any systemic danger at all?
No, there's risks there, like there are in any city in the world, but I wouldn't overstate those risks to foreigners there.
Well, let's talk about Rio's involvement in Mongolia, and possibly you could give us an outline of how it became involved in mining there and the current state of play, and what are the problems that the current Mongolian government has taken issue with?
Sure. Well, I guess the origin of the Oyu Tolgoi mine was that there was exploration that started back in the 1990s. BHP was involved in some exploration in that region and knew that there was copper there. Subsequently, another company, Ivanhoe Mines, became involved, and they discovered some very significant mineralisation. They were unable to take the project forward because it started to get to the point where it needed a great deal of investment, and Rio formed a partnership with Ivanhoe, which is now called Turquoise Hill Resources, and its involvement started around about around 2003. There was then a long process to get an investment agreement in place to define how that mine would be developed, and that resulted in the Mongolian government getting a 34% stake in the mine, which would be funded by Rio Tinto but paid for out of future dividends. So it's a $6 billion project, which was very difficult for Mongolia to fund. In 2009, the GDP of the country was about $5.5 billion. So it's an enormous.
It's really
shock
the linchpin
to the economy
of the whole place, in a way, isn't it?
Exactly. In 2009, after the GFC, the economy was in very bad shape. But after the signing of that investment agreement, you saw foreign investors taking confidence. The fact that Rio was prepared to invest $6 billion, many other investors in all sorts of sectors entered the country, and then we saw this very rapid economic growth start, which has continued over the last 2 or 3 years.
And look, the issue is that the government wants to they want to change the rules now. They want to increase their share of the mine to 51% from the 34% agreed, and they want to increase taxes and royalties and so on and so forth, which had been frozen during in the agreement for the lifetime of the mine. I suppose final question, really, David, what should What should people looking on take out of this? What advice are you offering at the moment in your consultancy role to business and funds managers looking to invest in Mongolia?
Well, I think there's a number of challenges. There's certainly Mongolia's got great potential as a mineral economy. It's got great mineral prospectivity, and no doubt if there's further exploration, there'll be more discoveries made. But the country needs to come to terms with foreign investment in its mineral sector. So resource nationalism is a real challenge for the country and its politicians and its political dialogue. There is work that needs to go on with its legislation around mining and around foreign investment, and a lot of that is still needs to mature to the point where it'll give other investors confidence to come in. And then finally, I think reconciling and finding a way to work with China is a great challenge. There's a great deal of hostility towards China in Mongolia, but yet that's where the market for most or all of these mineral products is most likely to be. Mm. So you know, I think that those are three key challenges that the country needs to come to terms with.
Very quickly, you did sit on the Mongolian Arts Council while you were there. Mm, what was that like?
Well, it was wonderful. It's a very vibrant, dynamic art scene in Mongolia. And it was a very exciting organisation to be involved in.
And you got Bangara Dance Company to tour there.
Yes, well, I had a sort of a hand in the early idea of that, but other people did all the hard work to get them there. But they've just recently toured in Mongolia, and from all the reports, it was very well accepted and welcomed by everyone there.
Who would have thought Bangara in Mongolia?
Exactly.
Look, thank you, David, very much indeed for contacting us. I really appreciate it.
No, my pleasure.
David Patterson, who's now management consultant to Australian companies dealing in Mongolia. And we'd be very keen to hear from people, intrepid travellers to Mongolia, possibly people doing much more than travelling there by the sound of it.